Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 810 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. Julio Diaz is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays here on News Radio, and the founder host of the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. And we have 9 movies this week. We will not get to them all, but let's start with this. Julio, welcome back to the show. Abigail, you watched last night. How was that?
Yes, that was a lot of fun. This is by the team Radio Silence, who also brought us the movie Ready or Not, which I really enjoyed, and have been responsible for the last 2 Scream movies. This is one that I kind of hope people haven't seen the trailer for and just go see, because the trailer gives things away that the movie would probably play just a little bit better if people didn't know before they went into it.
Got it.
But it is a horror movie with some comedic overtones about a group of criminals who kidnap a 12-year-old girl who turns out to be more than they think she is.
I got it. All right. All right.
And that's all I will say in that regard. But if you liked Ready or Not, if you liked the last 2 Scream movies, I think you're going to really like this. I had a lot of fun with it.
Henry Cavill and the woman who's too pretty to hire, Aza Gonzalez, according to her, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. This looks interesting.
I mean, I agree with that assessment of Aza Gonzalez, but you know, that's another story. And also the star of Reacher, is in this as well. Some big names in this. This is the latest film from Guy Ritchie. So if you know who he is, you kind of know what his style is. It is a comedic action film about the real life first special forces team that was ever created during World War II by the British government.
Hmm. Interesting. And
getting okay reviews on the 70% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Once again, we note that Aza Gonzalez is in it, and so how bad can it be, right? Spy X Family, Code White. This sounds like an anime, and judging by the names involved, I got that right.
It is, yeah. Spy X Family is a very popular anime series, and that is, you know, when new anime series get very popular, they spin off into movies. So this is one of those. It is about a family that is made up of a spy and an assassin who you do not know that the other one is what they are. And then they have a daughter who is a telepath who knows what both of them are, but they don't know that.
Okay, so it's Mr. and Mrs. Smith in Japan with a kid.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah,
okay.
A little bit.
All right.
But yeah, this is a very popular anime, and the reviews on this are very good, although there have been limited reviews out on it so far.
I should say a psychic kid, which is somewhat different. Sasquatch Sunset. Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Keough, the granddaughter of Elvis and Priscilla, we just announced that Priscilla Presley is coming to Pensacon.
Yes, well done, by the way.
Convenient timing. If you've ever wanted to see, you know, those two folks play Sasquatches in full ape suits and with no dialogue, just grunting at each other for, you know, an hour and a half. In a surreal comedy that follows a family of Sasquatches for a year, then this is the movie for you. I don't know who those people are that this movie is for.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling it's one of those things that you're either going to be vibing with it and you're going to love it, or you're just going to absolutely be like, how did this even get made?
I get like Jerry vibes off of this. Like, you know, you're going to think it was the most brilliant thing ever, or like we thought the dumbest movie ever made. So I'm,
yeah. But 72% on Rotten Tomatoes, so more critics seem to like it than don't.
All right. Deep Sky, movie number 5 of 9. What's this?
Documentary about the building of the James Webb Space Telescope, which is supposed to be just an absolutely gorgeous movie. It's had a Mitzvah for Grace, and it's a very short film. It's only 40 minutes. So keep that in mind if you do go to see this.
If you like slightly older stars, Hard Miles with Sean Astin and Matthew Modine.
This is kind of an inspirational film about a man who is building a bicycling team at a correctional school. From young offenders. It's getting pretty decent reviews on this one as well.
Villains Incorporated.
I like this concept. This hasn't been screened for critics, which doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence. But it's about three henchmen who try to go off on their own after their supervillain mastermind is no longer with us.
Oh, well, that sounds very entertaining. But, you know, good concept doesn't necessarily mean good movie.
Yeah, a comedy. Colin Mochrie is probably the best known name in it, who's a very funny guy.
Housekeeping for Beginners.
This is a foreign film about a woman who never wanted to be a child, but ends up with the two children of her partner through some circumstances, and has to raise them. And pretty good reviews on this one as well.
And the ninth, I kid you not, movie of the week, The Long Game.
We got to them all. This is about a gentleman who a Latino gentleman who wants to become a member of an all-white country club and, of course, is, disallowed to do so, but befriends the Latino caddies at the club who have built their own golf course to teach themselves golf and forms them into a high school golfing team.
Interesting. And what are you guys going to watch next week?
Next week, the big release is Challengers, which is a much-delayed movie thanks to the strikes last year. Starring Zendaya, that has some early Oscar buzz, where she's a championship tennis player who's injured and goes on to become a tennis coach and has two best friends who are both romantically interested in her, and drama ensues.
Well, sounds interesting. Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturday, or the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. Follow, listen to both. Julio Diaz, well done, fast. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
Coming up next, the Transgressors Memorial Service. Jimmy's got traffic on the fives.
If you are going southbound on Highway 29, just before 9 Mile Road, there was a vehicle crash earlier, so be cautious driving through there. And a vehicle crash on Fairfield Drive and Marcus Drive in Pensacola, that road is open now. We are not seeing any slowdowns or major actions on I-10 and I-110. And if you're heading in to Pensacola from Gulf Breeze and Navarre, that is flowing smoothly. If you see anything else on the road, please call or text our traffic tip line at 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. Your road to adventure starts with the 2024 Subaru Outback and the 2024 Subaru Forester. Both come standard with symmetrical all-wheel drive for confidence along the way. The Subaru Outback, according to Kelley Blue Book, is one of the best family cars of 2023. And according to Auto Trader and my good friend Max here, the Subaru Forester is one of the 2023 best cars for dog lovers. For information on all the awards and accolades from Kelley Blue Book and Auto Trader on the Subaru brand, the Subaru Outback, and the Subaru Forester, visit KelleyBlueBookKBB.com and AutoTrader.com. Whether you're a Forester family or an Outback family, your road to adventure starts in a Subaru from Anderson Subaru. Go where love takes you. Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola, online at AndersonSubaru.com.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Kelley Blue Book is a registered trademark of Kelley Blue Book Company, Incorporated. Auto Trader is a registered trademark and used with permission.
I've been collecting watches since around 2018. Made my first big purchase thinking that was going to be my only watch. When you're looking at watches and you're doing them online, or if you're in the secondary market, it can be scary because there's a lot of fakes. And I really do focus in on coming in to an authorized dealer like Bray's for any of the Omega or Breitling purchases. They will let you try it on, take pictures, go home, think about it, and just really set your mind at ease.
Come visit us at Bray Jewelers.
Bands on the Beach is back. Grab a lawn chair or towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, Mass Confusion takes the stage, playing classic rock, Motown, smooth jazz, funk, country, and oldies, all in their own style. Grab a blanket or lawn chair, but don't bring any pets or glass, and get to Bands on the Beach every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion, thanks to the Santa Rosa Island Authority.
Start your mornings off informed with all things Pensacola on the Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
our first remembrance is for math. Yes, you may not have realized it, but mathematics in America is fundamentally racist. A lesson we have learned through the excellent work of the Education Trust West, supported in part by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. One of the key liberation tools is a curriculum entitled A Pathway to Equitable Math Instruction, Dismantling Racism in Mathematics Instruction. As the document explains, quote, "The framework for deconstructing racism in mathematics offers essential characteristics of anti-racist math educators and critical approaches to dismantling white supremacy in math classrooms by visualizing the toxic characteristics of white supremacy culture with respect to math." Hallelujah, dear Utherin. This vital tool lays bare the implicit bias of having children focus on things like getting the right answers to math problems, which is a feature of perfectionism and either-or thinking, both key elements of white thought. Instead, children of color should be taught that approximately right answers are actually quite an achievement. Close counts in horseshoes, nuclear war, and now trigonometry. The notion of teachers being right and students being wrong reinforces the master-slave mindset that keeps children of color down in the white-ocracy. The very idea of grading math tests on the basis of mistakes made rather than concepts grasped is also very white, on top of the white supremacist notion that it's appropriate for a teacher to even grade a student at all, rather than to collaborate with them in a cooperative learning endeavor that values the communitarian whole rather than the isolated individual, another white supremacy paradigm. Now, obviously, you see the racism embedded in requiring students to show their work, as if they can't be trusted to have arrived at the conclusions in their own way, honestly. It's like stop and frisk in the classroom. And just notice how it reinforces the power hoarding of white supremacy culture to require students to raise their hands before speaking. Just the kind of cultural domination tactic used by every racist in history. So in sum, or total, or a collaboratively arrived at consensus estimate produced by a supportive co-equal participants, to rescue American math instruction from its implicit racism, we need to get rid of the idea of right and wrong answers, reward approximate correctness, allow students to be on par with teachers, not demand that they show their work, and especially not in class or with time constraints, and realize that when students fail to meet our expectations, that just means our expectations were defective, unfair, biased, or bigoted, rather than that the students were at fault. One additional note. If we're sincere about making math less racist, we really must do something about the tools we use. White paper? Really? No! If we can make blackboards with white chalk, surely we can make black paper with white pencils. After all, how can a child of color expect to learn anything in an environment so saturated in the whiteness of the dominant race? In the end, what could be more valuable for fostering excellence in math by black and brown children than letting them do math on a piece of paper that looks like they do? Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the National Basketball Association, which this week was revealed to be abysmally sexist due to the pay discrepancy between its players and the female players of the WNBA, which is 50% owned by the NBA. Case in point, college superstar Caitlin Clark, who is perhaps single-handedly responsible for the largest viewing audience in history for a women's NCAA final at 18 million viewers, 4 million more than the 14 million who watched the men's final this year, by the way. Despite this massive surge in audience, when Caitlin Clark was drafted as the number one overall pick in the WNBA, she entered a contract which only pays her $76,000 in her first year. By contrast, last year's first pick in the NBA draft, Victor Wembanyama, earned $12 million in his rookie season. This pay discrepancy puts the gender wage gap on display front and center in neon lights so bright that even the most repressive misogynist can't defend it. Although, and we hate to have to admit this, but if you do some math, there are unpleasant things to be learned. The NBA's gross annual revenue is around $10 billion, whereas the WNBA's gross annual revenue is about $60 million. And it doesn't turn a profit, which is why the NBA subsidizes it with $15 million a year of its own money. But if you divide $60 million into $10 billion, the NBA takes in about 167 times as much money as the WNBA. And when you divide Clark's $76,000 into Wembanyama's $12 million, he made only 158 times as much as she will. Speaking in a strictly mathematical sense, Caitlin Clark is being overpaid. Moreover, Clark already made $3 million last year from the name, image, and likeness rights, and she's already reportedly inked an eight-figure deal with Nike for next year, meaning that her $76,000 salary is so irrelevant that it won't even pay a month of her income tax on endorsement deals. Now, obviously, we don't talk about things like this because we know that truth is not what math reveals from numbers. Truth is what we feel about superficial facts that we do not investigate. Besides, we assume that most of the people in our faith are not good at math, so we don't really need to worry that they're ever going to figure this out. They literally can't figure things out. And so much the worse, or so much the better for our cause. As Dayton's seminal treatise on social justice warfare, volume 5, 4th edition, instructs us, when you have facts and reason, use facts and reason. When you do not have facts and reason, use emotion and yell. Being loud and angry will always persuade more people than being rational and logical. The only way to defeat the patriarchy is to use emotion and manipulation. So keep cherry-picking numbers that distract people from the truth, keep talking about the grave injustice being done against women in all endeavors, and keep working to make men feel guilty any way you can, especially if the facts are not on your side. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, our most vehement admiration for the Irish Green Party, and especially Senator Pauline O'Reilly, for all her hard work on the Incitement to Violence or Hatred and Hate Offenses Criminal Justice Bill, which would make it a crime for anyone to contribute toward making another person feel unsafe, disliked, judged, or hated for their race, color, nationality, religion, ethnic origin, gender, sex, sexual orientation, or disability.
Your views on other people's identities go to make their lives unsafe, insecure, and cause them such deep discomfort that they cannot live in peace, then I believe that it is our job as legislators to restrict those freedoms for the common good.
Yes! This is the heart of cancel culture. People who make others feel unsafe must be made to feel unsafe. That's the only way we can ever get to a more inclusive society, through government coercion. Now, what makes this particular bill so wonderful is that you can be convicted for saying or writing anything mean about a person in a protected category, but you can also be convicted for possessing mean speech or for simply intending to say or write anything mean. In fact, if you're suspected of intending to commit hate speech, the government can actually force you to unlock your phone and let them search for offensive content such as mean memes that would send you to jail. In other words, this bill creates a whole list of hate speech crime, hate speech thought crime, and even hate speech thought pre-crime. It's as if all the best ideas from 1984, Brave New World, and the Minority Report were being blended together in one giant blessed bundle of government virtue enforcement. The Irish have really figured out how to be faithful to our religion of inclusion for everyone we deem worthy of inclusion. And it's all possible because, unlike here in the meanocracy of the United States of America, where people are still allowed to say hurtful things because of that pesky First Amendment, Ireland has no such protection. As a result, it could very soon be illegal to even think seriously about saying hurtful things to other Irishmen under penalty of law.
This fundamentally comes down to only one thing. It is about, can we move forward towards a kinder society? And can we, within the fairly blunt instrument of legislation, do that in this chamber? And I believe we can, and I believe that this is an excellent step in that direction.
Yes. There is nothing quite as beautiful as forcing people to be nice because they're staring down the barrel of a government gun. The decadent rock and roll band Cheap Trick could only sing about the Dream Police, but Ireland is really on the verge of empowering the Meme Police. So exciting. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Refreshments this week are provided by Bumpin' Rind. All-natural, refreshing flavor additives made entirely from the peels of oranges, lemons, and limes discarded by restaurants and bars. Try the delicious lime rind salsa on your next batch of cruelty-free albacore or the pucker-tastic sugar-free orange rind compote on an imitation meat veggie burger. You'll be surprised at how long you can taste it afterwards. Remember, it's not dumpster diving if they give it to you in a box. Bumpin' Rind, because when you eat what other people would compost, you can really taste the virtue.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
I think I can taste the compote right now. Jimmy, you've been telling them all recently that there's not much traffic. Is that true? Not much traffic to report?
Not much traffic to report.
All right, very good. David Wayne's got our headlines. David?
Youth from across the country are gathered for the annual National 4-H Convention, which kicks off today. Members of 4-H chapters from across the country are in Arlington, Virginia. They'll hear from the nation's top ag official.
Vilsack. We'll talk to them during the Secretary's Assembly, which is the main event at conference. It kind of kicks off the entire event where they get to hear from the Secretary, and this year they'll get to ask him questions and do a fireside chat.
Yeah, I think the beginning of that was cut off. Tom Vilsack will be addressing them. Annie Seccarini of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture says they're also planning a trip to the USDA headquarters on Monday.
I think Annie Seccarini is actually the division head for sweeteners.
Really?
Seccarini? No, nobody? Nope. Jimmy's left. Sorry. By the way, all the education stuff on math, I didn't make up any of that except the need to have it be on black paper. The rest of that is all real stuff they're promoting.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Courts back in session for former President Trump's criminal trial in New York.
New York is going down as a very corrupt place to do business.
Trump heading into court this morning. 12 jurors and one alternate are seated so far.
This morning, they hope to get this finished to pick the final five alternates in this trial in order to kick off the opening statements on Monday. The alternates, of course, are used during the trial in case one of the regular jurors drops out for some reason.
Fox's Eric Shawn in New York. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the U.S. was not involved in an Israeli military strike inside Iran, a limited strike targeting an air base, retaliation for Iran's drone and missile strike last weekend.
The G7 condemned the unprecedented Iranian attack on Israel, unprecedented in scope and scale.
Secretary Blinken at a meeting of G7 allies in Italy, saying the alliance is committed to de-escalation in the region. America's listening to Fox News.
Good Friday morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Partly cloudy and 70 degrees in Pensacola this morning. Well, big news in Alabama. The Orange Beach Express going toll-free. The state announcing yesterday they've purchased the Foley Beach Express Bridge for $60 million. The last day of tolls will be the Friday before Memorial Day at noon. In a statement, Governor Kay Ivey said that Alabama's Gulf Coast continues to experience record growth, and she says she's proud that they're making needed infrastructure improvements in the area to ease traffic congestion for those who are visiting the beach. A bill establishing a statewide school chaplain program is now law.
You got a lot of these problems that kids go through. You know, that there's some students where, you know, they need some soul craft. And that can make all the difference in the world. And so these chaplains will be able to come and provide services.
Governor Ron DeSantis there. He says the program is voluntary. It also requires parental consent. He also signed another bill which allows groups like Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Civil Air Patrol and Future Farmers of America to come on campus and pitch for students to join those groups. NOAA giving its monthly climate update yesterday at March 2024, the warmest March on record across the globe in NOAA's 175-year history. The March global surface temperature was 2.5 degrees above the average of 54.9 degrees. NOAA monitoring chief Karen Gleason says the Atlantic Ocean was also warmer than normal.
Much of the central Atlantic Ocean continues to be record warm during the month of March. Record warm sea surface temperatures stretch from the Caribbean Sea across the tropical Atlantic into the northeastern Atlantic Ocean.
Warm ocean temperatures in the Atlantic have a direct impact on the severity of hurricane season, which begins on June 1st. Well, there's now a park named after one of Lionel Richie's biggest hit songs, and it's not all that far away in Alabama. It's Hello Park in Tuskegee, right across from Tuskegee University there, and Lionel Richie is from the town. He says he went home to visit the park this week. Richie called it the perfect destination to realize you can come from a small town and still affect the world. Pensacola police say they're investigating a robbery at the Family Dollar on North 9th Avenue this week.
A male wearing a mask attacked the clerk as he was leaving with deposit bags. He was actually waiting by his car. So we're still looking for that individual, looking for information. So if you know of any information that we could use, please give us a call or call Crime Stoppers.
And PPD spokesman Mike Wood there, he says the sheriff's office assisted in the search, but they weren't able to find that suspect. He says if store employees or ever feel something is wrong when they're closing up, PPD can respond to a store and make sure employees are safe and aren't robbed while they're carrying a large amount of cash. Well, get your fishing rods and reels ready. The Pensacola Beach Fishing Pier appears to be set to reopen sooner rather than later. It's been closed for repairs since December. Escambia County says the work should be done now by the end of the month. The repair work came in at about $4.2 million. The damage stemmed from Hurricane Sally in 2019. It's 8:35, and Jimmy has our traffic on the fives. Jimmy, what are you seeing out there right now?
We are looking pretty good here in Pensacola. Just some of that morning traffic coming in on Highway 98 from Gulf Breeze and Navarre. And Pace and Milton on Highway 90, you should be expecting some of that morning traffic as well. If you see anything else on the road to report, please call or text our traffic tip line at 437-1620. I'm Jimmy with your traffic on the fives.
It is going to be a beautiful day today, starting off cloudy, but the sunshine will come in as we head into the afternoon. Highs warming up in the low to mid 80s, very warm this afternoon. Overnight tonight, temperature dropping near 67. For Saturday, 10% chance of a few showers in the afternoon, otherwise partly cloudy skies with a high near 82. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 65. Next weathermaker brings rain for Sunday morning, 60% chance of those showers with a high near 74. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 72 in Pensacola, 71 in Gulf Breeze, 73 in Milton. Your money now. Markets are mixed today. The Dow is up 79.77 at 37,855.15. S&P 500 down 4. 412 at 5,745. The NASDAQ down just over 65 points at 15,536.14. Your 10-year bond rate is down slightly at 4.6%. Gold prices up $3.40, $29.34.60. Silver prices up 2 cents at $28.40. And looking at the crypto market today, Bitcoin is up this morning, although that price is still down considering where it had been. It's at 64,712.20 this morning, and the rest of the crypto market, as is normal, following Bitcoin's lead. Prospective home buyers feeling the squeeze as mortgage rates continue rising. Minnesota Federal Reserve President Neil Kashkari says getting inflation down is the key.
Ultimately, we know what we need to do. We need to get inflation back down to 2%. Once we do that, or we get closer to it, we'd be in a position to start dialing back some of our interest rate increases, and then you would expect that to flow through to cheaper mortgages for American families.
The average long-term U.S. mortgage rate is up above 7%, the highest level in nearly 5 months now. Oil prices jumped up $3 a barrel overnight after Israel's attack on Iran, although it has eased a bit now. Concerns over the potential disruption of Middle East oil was behind that jump. And Netflix saying they're going to stop reporting their quarterly subscriber numbers. The streaming service said in a letter to shareholders this week that membership is only one component of their growth. Netflix says they're focused on revenue and operating margin as their main indicators of performance. Those changes are expected to take effect in 2025. Our next news at 9, we have breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
The hip, you don't stop.
I will definitely call you back later then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's the end of the weekend. It means we take a half hour and if we had beers, we would drink them. But if we had coffee, I do have coffee. I could drink that. But hang out with some people here in studio and just talk about the events of the week. Joining me is Jeremy Evans, a longtime participant in the Wrap, who you know very well, and Buck Mitchell. First time. He is one of the owners of the family that owns Civil Quarter, and he is also, of course, running for District 4 for what will be a contested seat for the county commission in Escambia County. Buck, welcome to the wrap. Welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you for having me. About time I got on.
How many times have I asked you to be on the wrap over the years?
You have called me.
Several, a couple times.
I've been in this studio many times.
And you actually have a thing coming up. And but Jeremy, welcome. I don't think I officially put you on the air yet. You have a thing coming up, tomorrow at Seville for the Big Brothers and Big Sisters, a gumbo cook-off?
Yeah, we're doing the Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northwest Florida. We have our 27th annual gumbo cook-off tomorrow. The cooking is going to start around 11 o'clock, mm-hmm. and the tasting will be at from 4 to 6 p.m. We'll have 12 teams. We'll have the judges panel. But the best thing is the people's choice. So when you come in, it's $20. All the money goes to Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And you get to pick who you think. You have three votes. So you can the people's choice is always the most coveted.
I should confess this a little bit. I've never made real gumbo. I have done things that I don't want to talk about on the air that my boys enjoy, but it does not qualify as real gumbo. But I want to learn at some point. Is there a way to make gumbo in 10 minutes maybe instead of 4 hours?
No, I don't think so. And actually, it's better the next day. But, you know, the one of the great things about our gumbo cook-off is there's a wide, wide range of gumbos.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can have turkey, you can have seafood, you can have oyster. And so that's really, they come in, there's filet or okra with rice, without rice. So come on down and check it out and come support Big Brothers Big Sisters.
I love it. Very good. Jeremy, I know you and I have actually been texting this week a little bit about this NPR story. I know we talked about it last week with Josh and Kim, but even this week, it's the Yuri Berliner, this 25-year veteran at NPR, writes a scathing editorial about the dive off the woke cliff that NPR has taken over the last 6 or 7 years post-Trump. I think he's right on target. And now they put him on suspension for paid leave, and now he's quit. Like, the latest development is he's quit. So their reaction to, man, this scathing critique is, there's nothing wrong with us. You're in trouble.
Yeah, I think it is to me, this is a situation where it is the initial story is a story. It's out there. But I think the response is a far more interesting story of how NPR responded by suspending the author for not following the protocols of NPR and doing an outside story. But I'm assuming that's a policy that exists and is probably violated on a regular basis.
Right.
And when something comes to their attention and they don't really respond at all to what the article is, and particularly in something that I've been around for a long time, worked in D.C. 20 years ago. At that time, NPR was pretty left of center and it very well.
And known for.
Yeah. And well, it could very easily be that it's not some grand conspiracy that we're this way. Just not a lot of conservatives want to come here and work. Not where they're going to find their voice.
It's the self-selection bias,
right? It's self-selection
bias.
Like, there could be plenty of reasons that aren't grand conspiracy. But when you say we're not going to address the issue, we're just going to issue discipline.
Right.
I think you open yourself up to the grand fake news debate. And, I wonder, people who are my friends that are in the left that have no idea how Donald Trump, who's currently sitting in a jury trial for criminal charges in New York, could possibly be elected president again.
Right, right, right.
And then you have this is why. This is why there's a whole half of America that believes the story they hear aren't true.
Buck, I remember, one of my dad's, I talk with my dad all the time, and one of the things that he's observed is when you're in your media bubble, you just don't hear stuff that is simply true. And a lot of people who might have gotten what you'd call sort of mainstream news or liberal news, not the same thing, but, for years, literally didn't know that we had cities on fire during the George Floyd protests. Literally didn't know what was going on, in Portland. Just had no idea. And if you try to tell them, hey, this is what was going on, I thought there were peaceful protests. Some, not all. There's real vast, and on both sides, conservatives too, right? This is a problem.
Yeah, well, when there's fire behind you and they call it a peaceful protest,
right,
it's
exactly.
Certainly, your eyes don't deceive you. But that's the narrative they want to play, so.
What do you think about NPR's reaction to this? I mean, clearly, I think they were enforcing a rule, but as Jeremy, you say, do they enforce this rule regularly? And, instead of being self-critical, they punish the message bearer, right?
Well, I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. It's about time they all start, widening their audiences a little bit, because you're exactly right. Everybody lives in a bubble, and they don't know what's going on. You know, but thank God we don't have three channels anymore like we did in the old days. And they really did write the news.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case. This is something, this is a little complicated, but I think it's really interesting. Yesterday I was having a conversation with Lisa Newell, the Gulf Breeze News. We're talking about Highway 98, and, you know, it's been under construction for a while. It's going to be under construction for a while. And the problem is, at least the perception is, that FDOT does what they're going to do. And, I mean, it's true of all your DOTs around the country. I think they just do what they're going to do. But the feeling is they're not trying to be customer-oriented. They're not trying to be as light a touch, as little intrusive on businesses, as little intrusive on drivers. It's a feeling like we're going to do our thing and we don't really care how it affects you, and tough, because we're making your roads better. Why don't you just be more grateful? But businesses are going to go out. Avalon, businesses went out. Highway 29, you know, 9 Mile, Olive. I mean, this is a major impact on people's lives. Why can't they be more customer service oriented? Why can't they maybe have an economic fund to help get businesses over the hump to make it through? Because they're taking from businesses. I mean, businesses fail along these routes. It just seems like more could be done.
Yeah, you know, and the communication with the businesses is not there either. You're right. There should be something done. The businesses suffer. So, you know, if you're a local, go support those businesses. Mm-hmm. It might be a little difficult to get into them, but they need your support more now than ever.
That's what I always feel when I drive through a construction zone, is I think, God, these poor businesses dying while this is happening.
I can tell you, I live right on Scenic Highway, and they are doing construction north of I-10 all the way to the bridge to Pace. Mm-hmm. And they're choosing to do that construction from 8 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning.
Which is better.
Which is better unless you live on Scenic Highway and you're trying to sleep at night, and there's no communication on what's going on, how long it's going to go on, any of that stuff. I tried to call my county commission District 4 representative to get information on, is this a local project or a state project? Yeah. And for some reason, they haven't called me back yet.
Weird. So, the D4 isn't answering their phone?
No, D4 is not answering the phone to tell me what's going
Angela
on.
Angela is still answering the phone.
Angela will.
Thank God for Angela.
Yeah, that's its own special problem, right? Well, yeah, this whole – it's actually kind of interesting. I think a lot about D.C. because, you know, it's Mayor Pensacola, right? And there are a couple of things – you'll see where I'm going with this FDOT thing. There are a couple of things that he does that I just really admire, you know. And one is, he says, I didn't cause this problem. It's not really my job to fix this problem, but I'm the mayor and maybe I can do something about it. You know, I love that attitude about solving problems. But also, it's the customer service idea. As a business owner, Buck, you know, if people aren't happy, they don't come to Seville. Yeah. And in government, all too often, we just don't have that mindset. I mean, but really, government is a service. Now, it's a service that forces you to pay for it, but it is a service. And if the service is not provided in a way that customers want, well, they'll find somebody else to provide it or do what they can to change, right? I mean, that attitude should be the way you think about road construction projects or any other element of business or any other element of government, right?
Right. Well, it's always good not to upset the citizens with projects that certainly, you know, they're trying to make it better.
Right.
It's like Pensacola Beach. You know, there are a lot of things that are going to have to happen on the beach to get the traffic moving. Well, there's going to be some pain in that. You know, there's going to be some construction when they working on Bob Sykes Bridge. It backs up, but there's certain things that have to be done. Mm-hmm. Now, let's do it in the wintertime. Let's do it when it's not spring break. So those certainly need to be talked about, and FDOT needs to understand the schedule of when it's going to be so busy, and that unanswered phone of the District 4 rep.
You're well aware. So
I have people call me, and I'm like...
and actually, like right now, FDOT's doing another project, I-10 and US 29, this $250 million redesign of the interchange, and they just put out a thing a couple days ago. And to their credit, I think they do try to sort of news release stuff. I'm not sure that it's really enough, but like that they're going to be lane reductions starting on Monday in the overnight hours. You know, it's not supposed to be during business. We'll see. Because they're going to be putting in like a barrier wall while they're doing the reconstructive surgery. And so next week there's going to be lane closures on I-10. And there's a lot of people who are going to wake up Monday or Tuesday and be like, what the? Because I-10 doesn't always flow the smoothest. So I don't know. We'll see. It just seems to me like a lot of this stuff in government is we've got the power. We're going to do it the way that makes sense to us. And if that happens to make you happy, then great. But that's not a requirement, you know, and I just hate that attitude.
I do think that you can modernize how you get that information out there, putting information out through the Pensacola News Journal, which is now going to home delivery, or putting out the press releases you're required to by law is great. But how do you ensure that people get that?
Are you on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter,
Facebook? You have to go where people are,
right.
Not where it's like what required of you by law.
That's exactly right.
There's still a big road sign on Pensacola Beach that says behave.
Where is that? I don't remember that.
Well, it was put there for spring breakers.
Okay.
Basically what it says. But so you can do a big sign that kind of lets the people know a week, mm-hmm. week in advance. After spring break is over, that sign probably should.
You know, that's true, Jeremy. A lot of times it's just kind of these are the check boxes, what we have to do,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, well, is there maybe a better way?
Yeah.
You know, is there something else that we can do that will make this situation a whole lot better? Governor yesterday signs the chaplain bill and also the organizations to come to schools, you know, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, FFA. I don't remember all the different ones that are involved, but I think these bills together, you know, you have service organizations where they can meet other people and learn to do things in the community. And then also the chaplain's bill as having access to the kids so that their lives can be better. I don't know. I think this is great. I mean, I think this is why didn't we do this before? Schools can opt in. The school boards can opt in for the school district. Parents obviously have to opt in. Thoughts on the bill?
Yeah, I think, you know, when they've taken that out of the school, it's certainly, you can tell the decline, you know, and also, you know, learning history. I mean, there's only one way to know things, and it's to learn the history and not repeat it.
The communism bill that was signed this week
right? Yeah, exactly.
On the anniversary of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which I shudder to imagine how many people, even people who listen to news radio, you know, highly informed, highly motivated, educated listeners, there are, I am sure, people who are 30 and under who are like, what's a Bay of Pig? What do you mean? What is that? Is that a game? I don't know what
that is. They stopped teaching it on purpose. And we need to remind people, you know, why it happened and how it should never happen again.
Yeah.
You know, capitalism still is the greatest form of government because it lifts people up. And, you know, anybody who doesn't believe that, you know, that's why they're all coming here.
We were doing a weird rabbit hole earlier this week on GDP. And, you know, if you compare, say, the GDP of Escambia County, it's about equal to the GDP of Jamaica, even though they have about 10 times more people than we have in this county. Because capitalism and
I think
good government liberty kind of works, you know.
If you look at the state of Florida, I think they're in the top 20 GDPs in the world. I used to know exactly the number. I'm pretty sure it's the top 20. I think the bill is good. I think the other thing that was really good to come out of this week was I do think that the Republicans in the legislature here and the governor may have swung a little far right on some of the book stuff.
Yep.
I think you and I have had that conversation before in the past, and I was happy to see them be able to say, hey, we went too far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to rein some of this stuff back in. There are books, like I think the governor said, there are books that he read and he loved that are pulled off shelves.
Right.
And that's not okay, and we need to – there's times where we have to balance.
Yeah.
And I think that it was good to see, you know, the governor say, hey, we made a mistake. We went too far. We're going to try to fix this problem.
And he kind of couched it in, you know, some people are abusing the power to complain about the books on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I was actually stunned. Escambia County is like half of all of the complained about books in the state happened in Escambia County. Like, there's only several hundred of them that have even been complained about in the whole state, and we have, like, half the complaints in this county alone.
I think there's one other county that
I forget.
Like,
it's a county whose name I didn't really recognize.
But it's like the two of us have the lion's share of what's out there.
What did we do to deserve this? You know?
Well, it could be the same person, too.
Well,
here it was one person that was a media specialist up in the north part of the county who listed a bunch of things.
Right, and, you know, I'm with the governor. I think I don't mind letting a private citizen have a say, but what you really want to know is whether parents have a problem with these books. That's where the real source of the objections ought to come from, a parent with a school-aged child. And even me, like, we homeschooled. I don't know why. I mean, we have school-aged kids, but they're not in school. I mean, they were for a little bit, but, you know, so my opinion shouldn't matter as much as somebody who's got kids in the school, right?
That's correct.
437-1620, if you have something that you want us to talk about or you want to chime in on any of the stuff that we are talking about. 15 seconds, women's pay in basketball.
athletics is the great meritocracy. You know, it is you are paid what somebody thinks that you are worth and what you can prove that you're worth. Mm-hmm. It is the absolutest, greatest meritocracy that we have. People are paid no more than what people perceive their value to be, and I believe that to be the case.
We have a third rap participant here. No, Danny Zimmern doesn't want to say anything. He was here for Cat Country, I think, so good to have you, sir. Meritocracy in sports, you know, clearly that's the idea. And the WNBA loses money and is subsidized by the NBA, right?
Right. I mean, it sounds good. You know, equal pay always sounds good. But, you know, you have to earn it. And what are they going to do when they start letting guys play? You know, and then I guess the pay would go up because people would start watching. I'm kidding.
Yeah. You know, I guess this part of what, and I did this in the Transgressor ceremony, I brought this up, but what bothers me about this particular story is, you know, if you do the math, that's one thing. But, okay, so Caitlin Clark is making $76,000 in a money-losing endeavor, the WNBA. Maybe one day it makes money. I hope so. Wonderful. If people like it, they like it. But she's going to get, what, at least eight figures from Nike. I mean, she's not struggling.
And the people
she showed up in a $19,000 outfit or $17,000 Prada outfit to the draft day. She's not struggling. Stop it.
The people that are really upset about this, the people that are really complaining about this, how many WNBA games are going to? How many season tickets have they purchased?
Exactly,
how many sponsorships have they signed up for? How many partnerships have they developed? And if you can show me you're doing all these things, it's fine. If you're a keyboard warrior who's like, that's not fair. Well, what are you doing to support, you know, if you ever flip into the channels and you watch a WNBA game?
Yeah.
It's not particularly full. I did see that somebody put together a pretty funny joke about Caitlin Clark, and she says, we should not make more than NBA players, but nobody watches the LIV golf tour.
That's unfortunate, but, you know, there you go. You know, I have not gotten into the – no, I have a different one I want to get into. Santa Rosa County last week kind of took a first step in – protecting farmland. And there's a variety of tactics that they're going to use or consider using. Transfer development rights, easements for agriculture over the top of the land so that it can only be ever used for farming. You know, if you got a one house per acre, they can transfer that right to somewhere else and increase density so that you got the farmland is protected and you get the density where you need it. You know, buying land, conservation land is pretty expensive, but that's another possibility. I don't see any movement in this direction in this county. But we have the same problem in Escambia County, right? We have, God, if you drive north of 9 Mile, I mean, it's house after subdivision after house everywhere you go. And even south of there, it's everywhere we can infill and develop, right? It seems like we ought to be thinking a little bit more about the long term when it comes to farmland.
Yeah, you know, in District 4, there's not much more to be built.
Right. You're the city boy vote. Right.
Certainly going up north in the county. You know, always a long-term plan. Make sure that the neighborhoods aren't totally taken over because the infrastructure, you know, you have to – everything is a multiplier.
Yeah, I think it's always more of a question. We need to preserve the farmland. We need to develop smartly. We just need to make sure that if we're going to develop, infrastructure goes first before anything else. And then if we want to protect farmland, that's great. We don't want to handcuff people who have farmland to not being able to turn their land into something else by saying this can only be this thing.
Yeah, we don't want to force it.
Yeah.
We like to create a situation where the incentive aligns with doing the thing that's good for the community, right?
Yeah.
And that's where I see the opportunity is. Can we figure out some policies that, and it's probably going to cost money,
yep.
Okay? But can we do it in a way that makes it worth people staying in farming? Because as Ryan Jenkins is always saying, you know, if you plant a house, you never grow another peanut on that land. Buck Mitchell, Jeremy Evans, thanks for the time.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
The Escambia Sheriff's Office says drugs and guns were seized in a raid this week. We'll have more after this update from Fox News.